You know, which you use?
Well, the UFT had to really move, though, when you got agency fee taken away for the penalty on the strike of striking in 75.
Yeah, and that almost proved the point, because right. people felt good about, you know, doing something.
Like yeah, I think that. You almost got 100%. Yeah. Maybe even over sometimes.
it was very fascinating.
Yeah.
So that was 75, and I worked at headquarters from 75 to 78.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 78, Al asked me if I would run for Secretary Treasurer of NYSET.
Speaking of NYSET, were you involved in anything with the founding conventions, the merger conventions?
Well, I was a delegate.
You were a delegate?
At all of those, okay. at all of the conventions.
You were with Utney delegate as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. But I was not on the negotiating team that right. negotiated the merger.
Right. But what did you see? Here you are, a delegate. Paul Cole in the back, microphone one or two, saying, and he stands up. Do you think that he was going to put down the merger?
Well, no, I was. Well, you. Now you're talking about the NYSTA
yeah.
convention.
Oh, you weren't. You wouldn't have been there by then.
No, no, because that was the NYSTA members.
Okay, that's right.
But I was on the very first board of directors of the merged organization.
With the I'm sorry. Right, with the little cards.
With the reds and the greens. Yeah, I was elected to the board of directors.
Right.
From the very beginning, okay. from 72 on, which probably was one of the reasons that Al asked me to run in 78
yeah.
rather than asking somebody else, because I did have a lot of, by 78, I had a lot of relationships with upstate people, because from 72 on, I was asked to chair the convention committee of the newly merged organization.
Okay.
God, I forgot all about that. And so I did, and I went around the state to talk about the newly merged organization's convention.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a way of, you know, starting to get to know people
sure.
from the other side.
Right, and you weren't. And what was some of the people's first reactions to you? Here's the UFT representative going upstate.
Well, it was very interesting. people have views, right? Mm-hmm. New York City, those are tough guys that chew on cigars. You know, everybody has their stereotypes, and New York City people have stereotypes of upstate people. And I used to have people, after people got to know me, it wasn't unusual for people to say, you know, you don't sound like a person from New York. You know, you're kind of quiet and laid back, and which is probably one of the reasons Al asked me to go off, you know, because I wasn't a screamer or a yeller. So people were kind of surprised, I think, that, you know, their particular view.
Right.
What was very interesting, too, is that the NYSTA people who came to the merged organization, many of them were, I don't know if I'm using the right term, but it was like they were born-again unionists. They were so committed to unionism. Paul Cole.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, and look, Paul becomes Secretary Treasurer of the New York State AFL-CIO, and now that he's retired, what's he doing? You know, he's got his labor history work, you know, mm-hmm. that he does.
Even Tom Hobart, I mean.
Tom, sure, right. So there was a, and this happened to a lot of local leaders, too. They became so gung-ho for union. People who didn't have a longer background mm-hmm. in the union than some of us, you know, had. From
they know all the words of solidarity forever, right?
That's right.
All the verses.
They know all the words. Can we take a 3-minute break?
Absolutely.
Good.
Okay, we're back on.
Okay.
And we were talking about the born-again unionists of NYSET.
Yeah, they were very committed. I think that the just prior to the merger, I think there was a sense on the part of the former Nyster people, a real hesitancy, a feeling that they were going to be taken over. Mm-hmm. And part of that was, is not unusual or surprising, because remember that most of Utney, 90% of Utney, was New York City. And so here we were, this tremendously large group that was very close and knit together. And Nyster was all over the state. They were large, but they didn't have a political caucus system where they were all together. And so they were afraid of this colossus that was going to come in. And I think that's very understandable. The interesting thing was how smoothly it all went. I mean, I remember the first meeting of the merged board, where we voted with green and or red, and they voted with green because we were 3/5 of, you know, whatever it was.
Right.
I can't tell you how quickly it moved from two camps to one organization. Mm-hmm. Really, it was pretty easy. I mean, it happened very, very quickly.
Which is amazing, because the rest of the country, with talking of merger of the AFT and NEA and even other locals, they couldn't connect. I mean, Los Angeles did, but Flint fell apart, and this fell apart.
Part of it was leadership. Part of it was the nature of the challenges that faced teachers. You had the Jarabek laws, you know about mm-hmm. the Jarabek laws. So when tenure was threatened, the downstate and the upstate folks were equally threatened, and they understood we got to get together.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you and I are fighting each other, but all of a sudden the guerrilla comes. Well, we got to get together.
Which brings up, you know, that's why. Obviously, Nyster became a huge political force.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, too, there was a personal part of all this. People, I think, moved pretty quickly to like each other and to get along. It was not too... It was not... You didn't have, like, everybody sitting together at the... I remember the first convention. And I remember UFT, because we were so big, we had like 650 delegates. I remember saying, we shouldn't all sit together. Mm-hmm. You know, like sit in groups and get to meet people. And that happened, and it really happened rather quickly. I mean, I was asked to chair the conventions committee for the first convention. And on that committee, I had, I think, 8 people. And there were, you know, 4 from the former Utney and 4 from... It all came together so quickly. It was just...
This is amazing.
It wasn't those 4 over there, these 4 over here. Because we got into... And I think the reason for it was that the nature of the agendas we have were real work. Mm-hmm. How do you put this together? I mean, we didn't have time to get into all that stuff. And you'd find that somebody would support you who was a former Nyster person, and somebody thought maybe that didn't work, was a former person who was, you know, an ugly person. It just happened so easily. And that's my recollection.
Right. And it was easier to fight off the NEA raid. They didn't have much, but there was a threat in 70.
Yeah, by that time, 78, what? No. That's right. It was 75. 72 was the merger. Mm-hmm. 75 was the raid.
74, they're building it. It's been 74 and 76 were...
Right.
Yeah.
By that time, there was so much interaction. I mean, I remember Zita Arriman. She was the president of the Great Neck local. Very nice lady. And she was on the convention committee. And we just hit it off. Mm-hmm. And I remember 2 years later when the NEA came in, I remember Zita saying to me, what are they, crazy? I mean, it was not, oh, that's my former group or anything like that. It really wasn't. And the NEA was, I think what people were most unhappy with the NEA was that what they were, it was clear that they were trying to split again. And people had gone through 20 years of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Al said at just before the merger, we had about 90,000 members and they had 110,000 or something like that, which made it easier, you know, to merge. And he said, 1 and 1 equals 3. You know, he said, look, we've been saying they're terrible, they've been saying we're terrible. And most people who aren't organized believe both of us. You know, now that we're going to be together, you're going to see very quickly a lot of people who aren't in either organization who join us. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, they just fell right in line.
Oh, yeah, we went from the 200,000 to begin with to like 300,000 very, very quickly because there were a lot of... And then, of course, you had people who were attracted to the strength of the organization. So you had the psychologists come in 10 years ago, whatever it was. Why'd they come in? For one reason, because we had strength in the legislature, and they saw that all their problems were legislative problems, you know. So it was an interesting time, but it happened neat. It was just, it was as nice as it was cut and butter.
Right, right.
That's my recollection. Maybe you're hearing something different.
No, that's, but I just want a couple things I want to talk about NYSET, especially with the growth. Since becoming NYSET became a huge thing, it is you're competing with SEIU then, with the Public Employees Federation.
Yes.
Do you remember much about that whole fighting off, I forget the other group, it was a state employer association, then a merger with SEIU? And
that was the year I became Secretary Treasurer. Within a few weeks of me becoming Secretary Treasurer, or a few months,
mm-hmm.
we won collective bargaining for the Public Employees Federation. That was the culmination of about 10 years of organizing. And during that 10-year period, we had joint efforts with a number of different unions, and I can't recall it, Phil Kugel and all that stuff. But finally, the SEIU, NYSET, AFT, organizing drive won. And just as I was elected Secretary Treasurer, that's when we won. And that was very interesting because, first of all, it was a hybrid. You know, it was the idea was that we'll work together on this, and if we win, you know, half will be ours and half will be yours, and we'll figure out a way to do it. They hadn't figured out a way to do it. And then when we won, we didn't... there were problems. There were financial considerations as to how this had to be done because the SEIU due structure was such that the AFT NYSET structure was much more.
Mm-hmm.
And neither side would have accepted that. You know, we went into this together, we all put our monies in together, but now all of a sudden AFT NYSET is going to have a lot more dues flowing. So, and that's because SEIU had its dues, and AFT's dues were about the same. But when you added NYSET, NYSET dues were twice what AFTs were. So it would have been 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
What we did was, I remember Bob Porter asked me to represent AFT as well as NYSET at negotiations. And we ended up where we made PEF a state affiliate unto itself. It was not part of NYSET. And really, the reason we did that, because I think one of the reasons that we got the votes was that NYSET's political clout was very attractive to the public employees.
Right.
So what we did was we said, look, will house you in our offices around the state where you want that. We will work as one on political stuff. But you will be your own state federation. And therefore, you will pay AFT dues, not AFT and NYSA dues. And therefore, it was... And what we did was, AFT and NYSA made a deal.
Hmm.
And I was on both sides of that table. I represented AFT and NYSA, but of course with Al and Bob being in it. We said, because NYSA is providing certain services that AFT would have had to provide to PEF as a state affiliate, we will split the AFT dues. And that's what we did. And to this day, AFT, I believe to this day, AFT fund provides NYSA with monies from PEF because NYSA provides services to PEF. So it solved the problem of PEF, SEIU, and AFT's money flow, that it was equal, and they have about 52,000 members, so they pay on 26,000, less than 26,000, whatever it is. And at the same time, we still had the NYSA connection in terms of maintaining a relationship.
Right.
But it was not an affiliate relationship. It was a... We're both affiliates of AFT. You're not part of NYSA. Right. And that's satisfying.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense now.
Okay.
Because I've always wondered about the PEF structure, how they fell in line. Then, of course, the whole dues paying back, but that was something...
It was just untenable.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say you got to pay $3 to AFT for every dollar you're paying to SEIU. First of all, it would have brought in the bank. Mm. And they needed the money to develop their own service structure.
Right.
You know, right. So we recognize that.
What was the response for the teachers?
To having PEF?
Yeah.
This was not a problem. It was... It would have been a problem if we had decreased the service aspect to teachers in order to spend money on the PEF. That would have been a problem.
Right. But PEF. Let me just try and get this going again. So, we were just discussing the whole PEF relationship with NYSA. One other issue was with a UUP that was another organizing battle, and here comes a very large higher ed into NYSA. I just read literally a little bit about it. Was there an issue with UUP?
No, when I went up there full-time in 78, UUP was already in. I think that, remember, you had, trying to recall, in New York City, at the time of merger, you had two higher ed entities. Right. You had the AFL, AFL-CIO, AFT local, which was Izzy Kugler was the president, Phil's dad. And then you had the AAUP, NEA local, which was Bell Zeller. And so when we merged, those two merged. And so that was not a problem. UUP was a very large local, and as I recall, was it Tom Mannix who was a higher ed guy who was in Utney? I shouldn't say that, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I think UUP had, and I'm not intimately involved with that stuff, but UUP had concerns that they were going to be in a union, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's those are workers and we're professionals.
Another elite side.
I remember when one of our people who was an elementary school teacher was trying to motivate the higher ed folks to join in New York. I remember her coming back from a meeting, and she said, what really helped most was that after they talked about how they didn't think they should be part of a union, she said, I hope I didn't do the wrong thing, but I asked them what their salary was. And then I told them what my salary was as an elementary school teacher, and it was more. And she said, that was really helpful.
Usually it's. Yeah. So what were some of your duties? 78, what were some of the things that you kicked off?
Well, you know, 78 was probably, was, as I recall, the only election that was a contested election for the leadership. You know that. Dan Sanders mm-hmm. ran against Tom. And Al asked me to run because he felt that there were financial problems and at Nice. And he felt that he liked very much Ed Rogers, who was the secretary treasurer. And Ed was close to Tom Hobart and Tony Cortese. Mm. And Al liked Ed. He was a good trade unionist. But he felt that he wasn't right for that job. And as a matter of fact, Al asked me to, and so I ran for secretary treasurer against Ed. By the way, who was an extremely decent human being, very good guy. I liked him a lot. And we had a good relationship. And Dan Sanders ran against Tom for president. And Nancy Kleintop on Dan's slate ran against Tony Cortese. And Ken Deedy on Dan's slate ran against Paul Cole. Mm-hmm. I was not on any slate. I just ran as an independent. Hmm. Al said to me, he said, you know, and he knew that I had a relationship with Ed. He said, speak to Ed. He said, I don't have a problem with supporting Ed for a position as an officer. I only have a problem with supporting him to continue to be the secretary treasurer. And I spoke to Ed. And I said, you know what, if you ran for the vice presidency from Long Island, I said, you could be supported. But he felt that he wanted to be loyal to Tom and Tony. And he said, no, I just can't do that. And so that election took place. And it was a very close election, mm-hmm. very close. And of course, Tom won. And Al had taken the position that we need both of them. He was trying to maintain the organization. So we had a decision in the caucus that whoever won the presidency, the other one would be the executive vice president. They run against each other. And that's what happened. So Tom just barely beat Dan, and Dan became the executive vice president and continued to do what he had done from 72 on, right, which was do all the legislative work. I became the secretary treasurer. Tony won, and Ken Deedy won. And that's when Paul Cole, within a few years, had the support of Al to be secretary treasurer of the New York State AFL-CIO. I was secretary treasurer from 1978 to 1986. When Dan Sanders retired, Danny wasn't well by that point. And in 1986, I was elected executive vice president and went up and did all the lobbying stuff, right, from 86 to 94 when I retired.
So during this time as secretary treasurer, you're building NYSET within not only the New York State AFL-CIO, but a presence in Albany, and building this in service structure of NYSET, right, to what it is today.
It's amazing. During those years, we put up a building. We put up. When I went up there, we still rented at 80 Wolf Road. We rented two floors or one floor, whatever it was. And we expanded so quickly in the state that we realized that the place was really too small for us. And number two, it didn't make sense to rent. We should own. As a matter of fact, we took the position because we were getting so large, and we had 8 or 9 offices around the state to service the locals. Remember, too, that there were a lot of interesting things that happened at that time.
Right.
You had probably 10 locals that had 50% of the membership, 45% of the membership. And then you had 800 other locals that had 50%, 55%. You had a fascinating organization. You had the largest local union in the world, almost 100,000 members at that point in New York City. And you had a local of 6 members in East Shelter Island, had 6 members. Hmm. So here you are with a need for a servicing program where you had 45% of the membership in locals that were so large. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Yonkers and Syracuse and Rochester and New York, and some of them, there were 2,000 member locals on Long Island, where some of the really large locals had enough wherewithal to service themselves. But you had 800 locals that couldn't service themselves. So what did we do? We had a program that said, if you can provide services, you will get back money for the services that we're not providing. You're providing it yourself. So, because it was untenable, you couldn't expect a local like New York or Syracuse or Rochester to pay its full dues to the state when the state wasn't giving it back. I mean, they needed the state not to service the members. They needed the state for political action, you know, for all those other things, for pension reform, for the things they couldn't do by themselves. So how the heck do you keep this together? Well, what you do is you say, you're providing certain things for yourself. So you'll get, you have to pay it to us because everybody has to pay the same amount. But you will get back a certain amount for providing services that we don't have to provide. And there was a formula. Mm-hmm. And its formula is still there to this day.
Wow.
And there were locals that were right on the edge of it that wanted that money back, right? And so that was always a contention. At any rate, so what we did was we had offices throughout the state. Well, we became so big that not only did we put up a building for our statewide headquarters, but we bought buildings all around the state. We've got a lot of real estate now. You've got 500,000 members, and you've got, you know, all that servicing to do. Mm-hmm. So those were fascinating times.
Just huge growth. Fast growth again.
Yeah. I lost my thought.
Just fast growth, doing the service for the members from us. Membership of 6 to 100,000, balancing that out.
The fast growth was also a difficult thing for us in many ways. Staff was happy to organize and bring people in, but at the same time, they didn't see the staff growing as quickly. You know, if you have a local of 50 people, it may take you as long to negotiate a contract for 50 people as it does for 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. And so the staff would say, hey, you know, every time we organize a group, we're giving ourselves more work because we got to see a growth in staff. And so they began to be concerned with things which they should be concerned with, and that we should be, that management should be concerned with, and that is class size.
Right.
How many people do I have to service? And that became a bone of contention. I remember when during negotiations, the staff wanted to be able to say, let's have a formula. You know, and we didn't want to get into formula, because how do you put together a formula for all this kind of different, you know, crazy stuff? But we recognized that that was a problem that we had to address and make sure that we did. And the staff did grow. I don't think it ever grew as fast as any staff would want it to grow, but it certainly did grow to reflect the fact that we had.
All right. Didn't they strike one time?
Oh, yes. I was the chief negotiator of that strike.
What was the contention there?
Well, it was interesting. As happens very often, you know, we each have our own view of the world, the priorities of what's important. I grew up in a situation where cars, the kind of car I had, was never important to me. I wasn't into cars.
Right.
But the staff guys spend a lot of their time in their cars.
They live in their cars, yeah.
Cars, very important. Well, when I went up there in 78, it was when the gasoline went through the roof. And we had 150 cars or something like that that we rented, leased. And as we started to look at the prices of gasoline and the costs to us, I said, well, you know, we're going to put these guys in smaller cars. I didn't think that was a big deal. It was a big deal. A car is a car, you know?
Yes.
Right? Wrong.
Yeah.
Plus, they before I went up there, for whatever reason, one of the guys who led the staff union was in charge of negotiating to get cars. Crazy. And so we said, the management should be managing the cars. We should do that. And some of the cars are really big cars.
I can imagine.
So we said that we would do that from now on. And we also said that we needed to negotiate smaller, not tiny cars, but smaller cars. That was a big bone of contention. In addition, I think that when I went into negotiations, and by the way, I thought that the guys who negotiated were good. They were good people. I did something that I think they weren't used to, and that is they came in with a set of demands, and we came in with a number of things that we wanted. They weren't used to that. Being as honest as I can. And so there was a bone of contention there. And we came to an agreement with the staff negotiators the night of the vote. Hmm. And we shook hands on it. And they went into a membership meeting. I don't think there were a lot of people there. And it was voted down by, I think, 2 votes, which was too bad. And we had a strike for 2 weeks. We ended up with a contract 2 weeks later that was not a lot different. And that was the only strike, I think, that we had. Mm-hmm. So it was contentious,
but that's what they are.
Yeah,
that's what they are.
Yeah.
Now, nice at the start of the membership organizing program. Do you remember starting that in the early '80s?
Yeah, I remember that that was tied in part to the agency fee thing.
Oh, okay.
Because once we got agency fee, there was not as much motivation to sign people up.
Mm-hmm.
And we had situations where a significant proportion of people in the unit were not members. By the way, some of them weren't members and didn't know that they weren't members because they saw money taken out.
Of course.
A lot of people didn't even know they weren't members. So because of that, we began to spend time on, you know, what's going to be the vibrancy of the union,
mm-hmm.
if you have a tremendous number of people who don't feel a part of it.
You're running a business.
Yeah. You know, then it becomes business union. And so that, there was a good bit of time taken with trying to sensitize the local affiliates to spend time. And what we did was, as I recall it, we had certain incentives. You know, if you we put together materials, I think if you organized so many more people, you would get so much more service goodies or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
But I, as I recall it, that was a reflection of the agency fee thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And again, you know, people were so busy servicing members too that they didn't, and they had agency fee, they didn't think it was.
They didn't think it was an issue.
Right.
Yeah. But it's the lifeblood of the union.
Yeah.
Yeah, those members keep coming in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. And also, nice, it now becomes the big gorilla. Starting to become a big gorilla political. That's true. Always there's the story of the teachers elected Como over Koch.
Yeah, that was when Como was elected. Danny was still doing all the legislative stuff,
mm-hmm.
so I was not intimately involved with all of that. and I really probably don't have a lot that I can
give you
on the internal stuff on that.
Okay, you're basically building up an in-service, getting locals to
from 78 to 86, when I was the secretary treasurer, it was building the financial health of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. We had growth, but because we had growth, we also had a lot of stress on the service organization, and therefore we had to hire people. We had to provide, you know, more in the way of service benefits. There were all kinds of problems with attacks on pensions and changes in the health programs and all that. So we were at a time of expansion, but one of the things that was really important was to get dues increases. And I spent a good deal of time going around the state talking about the nature of, we had conventions every year,
mm-hmm.
talking about the need for increases, and it was fascinating. We always got the increases that we asked for. You know, you would negotiate and get what you needed, but people would try to, you know, get you down, and the board would make a recommendation. We always got it, but people felt that it was very important. Delegates to the convention felt it was very important to for them to be able to say yes or no. Because I look back, I came in 78, in about 84, I look back and I said, you know, if you look at all the increases we've gotten over the last 15 years, and every year, you know, it's contentious, and you get on the floor, and you have to, yeah, you got to put together a campaign and a big booklet and all that. And I said, you know what's been interesting? If you look out over all these years, if we had a formula, and we get a formula passed, we I have to go through this every year. And I figured out what the formula would have to be to reflect what we had done.
Right.
Formula was 2.5%, 3%, whatever it was. It was as the median salary of the teachers go up according to the state, you know, it just fit. It was easy. And so I went around the state and I said, look, we knock ourselves out every year. We go back and forth. You always approve. Right? Let's not drive ourselves nuts with this. If this year we put in this formula, we'll get the exact same result. Voted down. They voted it down. Because they want, and I understand it, mm-hmm. they wanted to be able to say yes or no. Right. And they have a right to.
Power to, yeah.
Yeah. So, they voted it down, but they voted the increase. I mean, it really is interesting. And every year, you know, when they ask for an increase, they don't ask for it every year, but when they do, they get it. But the delegates wanted the ability. And after it was all over, I said, yeah, they're right. You know, they're right. We'll give it to you when you ask for it, but you got to ask for it. It was interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting to see that. Because you would save up so much time on convention.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, I would make the presentation when I went around to all the, you know, because there were election districts. Mm-hmm. You know, the board was made up of the heads of the election districts who were elected by the leaders, the same way we did at UFT, the district reps and all that. And I would go around and I would explain this. They would all shake their heads. Yes, they understood it. But they're too ignorant to it.
What, did you also put together the conventions?
Yeah, but by that time
it was run by itself.
Yeah, remember, it's every year.
Yeah.
By the way, that was another issue. Back in, sometime in the middle 80s or late 80s, I think, there was a lot of talk about do we need a convention every year? At the time that AFT went to biennial. Yeah. Look how much it could cost, a lot of money to put on a convention with 3,000, 2,000 delegates, whatever it was we had. But the delegates wanted it, and they were the ones who would vote on it. They liked going to convention, and they liked having, you know, going through resolutions and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So AFT was able to do it, but NYSET was not.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
They still go every year.
Yeah. Every year.
Do you want to take a lunch break?
Sure.
Come back?
Yeah, why don't we do